My grandfather used to say that when everything is going well, that's when you should worry the most. It never sounded like a pessimistic wish, but rather like a kind of unwritten law that is fulfilled with cruel punctuality. The moments of greatest stability are those that precede the fall. My father had 6 brothers. They were all men raised in the same house with the same rules, and yet none of them were ever like the others. The oldest of them was the one who went the furthest. He made money, houses, cars, trips. A life that others viewed with a mixture of respect and resentment. But he lost all of that suddenly. He was scammed in a way that my uncles are embarrassed to talk about. He was offered a role in the construction of luxury apartments in an exclusive area. They told him about plans, permits, and very high returns. He invested 90% of the money he had. When they called him to show him the land and the progress, no one showed up. The company didn't exist, it never did. Everything snowballed. First it was the investment, then the other things he had. The cars, a van that looked armored because of how luxurious it was, the watches. All he had left was the house, and even that began to empty out little by little. He had no choice but to sell the furniture, which by the way was luxurious. What my uncle suffered was practically a free fall. He didn't have time to process anything because everything was one blow after another. I was surprised to learn that he had exotic skins. I was surprised because I think the worst of people who buy these types of objects. They seem frivolous, unnecessary, and quite cruel. But there he was one afternoon sitting in our living room showing my dad a coat that looked like it came out of a movie. He asked him if he knew anyone who could buy it. Even the question felt out of place, almost offensive. We didn't have contact with people who would consider owning that type of object. Nevertheless, I loved him very much. It hurt me to see him so defeated, with his voice muffled. While they were talking, I joined a Facebook group and started offering it. It wasn't long before I found a buyer for the weekend. My uncle was asking 50,000 pesos. That thing cost like 200. I got him to pay 90,000 in cash. He gave my dad 10 as a thank you, and after that we didn't see him again for a long time. He cut off communication with us. One time I went to look for him at his house, not with the intention of bothering him, but just to see if he was okay. Before knocking on the door, I called him. He told me he wasn't home, that he had gone out early and wouldn't be back all day, but I could see the lights on from the sidewalk. Even one of the curtains moved as if someone had leaned out onto the street. After that, things gradually started to get better for him, at least on the surface. Something had changed in him. Everything that had happened to him affected him more than we thought. For starters, he didn't go home at all anymore. It used to be common for him to come visit, to sit down and have coffee with my dad, and to tell us about his life. From that moment on, he never invited us back to his house again. He did things very much on his own. He became dry, distant. He didn't always answer calls or messages. He said he was very busy. That could be it. Maybe he was working all day to recover, to rebuild what he had lost. We imagined it, but we didn't know for sure. No one knew what he was working on or what was taking up all his time. There was something opaque about his new routine, like a life he had decided to lead on the side, away from everyone, until one day something happened to him and he called me on the phone, not my dad, not my other uncles, me. He told me he was out of town and that he had had a problem. So he wasn't going to be able to come home that night, so he asked me if I could please go feed his dog. His voice sounded strange, weak, as if he didn't want to explain further. I said yes, of course. He gave me very specific instructions to find the key that would allow me to enter his house. He told me to go to a Walmart, which is about 5 minutes away, that behind the square where the supermarket is located there is a small park, to look for the big swings and to dig a little in the ground under one of the legs, the blue one. I was going to find a small plastic box. I did. It was exactly where he said. And yes, inside was the key to his house. I couldn't help but wonder if anyone else does that. Burying keys in public places in case they lose them or are forgotten inside. It seems strange to me, but also very calculated, as if he had been living this way for a long time, with backup plans for everything. He asked me to call him back as soon as I was inside. I arrived. Sure enough, his house didn't look like I remembered it. It was furnished, although not with the type of furniture he had before. No leather, no fur, no shiny surfaces. Some of the furniture looked handmade, carved with basic tools. Others didn't look like they were bought, but rather assembled with recycled wood or pieces of other furniture. It was his house, but it wasn't his house. Before calling him, I decided to start looking for the dog. I checked every corner, went room by room, opened the bathroom, the kitchen, checked the closet. Even inside the closet there was no dog, no trace, not a plate, not a leash, no hair on the floor, nothing. I called him and he answered almost immediately. He asked me if I was already inside. I said yes. He told me he was going to give me some instructions, but first he asked me to promise that I wouldn't tell anyone, that I would do exactly what he asked me to do without question, and that when I returned he would give me an explanation. He told me to go to the kitchen, open the freezer, and take out a toaster. Whichever one it was, it didn't matter which one, I should put it in the microwave, set it for 6.5 minutes. I went. The refrigerator was full of containers of prepared food, organized, stacked, labeled with recent dates, all the same type, clear plastic with blue lids. Good idea if you want to save money, I thought. Freeze everything on Sunday and eat during the week. But there were too many, there was barely room for more and they all looked exactly the same. I I took one, I didn't want to look at what was inside, I put it in the microwave, set it for 6.5 minutes and stood there watching the shadow of that lid spin as it heated up. My uncle also told me to open the gas oven, not to turn it on, but to lift the cover that hid the burners, that there I would find a second key. I did it and there was a small, old key with dried grease on the teeth. He told me to put the lid on a tray because it would probably come out of the microwave very hot. Everything was done with a precision that made me feel like I had it all memorized. When he told me to pour a glass of water and grab a spoon, I felt a cold sweat run down my back. I remained silent for a few seconds with the phone to my ear. A dog doesn't drink water from a glass. A dog doesn't need a spoon. I didn't say anything, I just answered yes, that I was already doing it. Go to the back of the house, open the first door, cross the patio, open the second door, go up, go in and put the tray on the floor. There was a pause. What you're going to see in that room may frighten you and you may not understand it, but no matter what I say, don't try to set it free. When I get home, I'll explain. I can trust you. I didn't know what to tell him. Honestly, I didn't know why he had chosen me to do him that favor. I can trust you, he hung up without waiting for me to answer. I stood there for a few seconds, still holding the phone in my hand, waiting as if it would ring again, as if it were going to ask me for something else. It didn't ring. I went to the back of the house with the tray and the glass of water shaking in my hands. I was scared. I didn't know what I was going to find. He didn't tell me what was up there. He didn't say if it was dangerous. He didn't say if it was human. I couldn't help but think of a monster, a creature, a demon, something my uncle fed every day. Towards the end of the house, there was a small door. Beyond that, a cement-lined square opened to the sky. The ideal place for a dog, I thought, only there were no animals there. At the back of that patio was another door. The key I found in the oven was to open that door. It wasn't a room, it was a dark void before me, a staircase leading up. I managed to see a switch next to the door frame. I turned it on. The stairs' narrow concrete steps and wooden steps were illuminated by spotlights hanging like those in an old attic. Then I froze. I didn't know where to put the tray. I didn't know if the dog was loose, tied up, if he was going to run out at me, if I could escape now that I had left the door open behind me. At the top of the stairs was a chamber. This wasn't just any attic. It had no windows or vents. Narrow on the sides and upwards, as if it had been built so that no one else would know it existed. The walls were unevenly plastered and there was a metallic smell in the air, like dampness and rust. Inside was a person. Sitting on a narrow bed, back hunched, was a human figure missing a leg and an arm. Skin pale, dry, as if it hadn't seen the light in years. I moved a little closer and understood. The chain wrapped around the remaining ankle and was attached to one of the bed legs. Yes, he could stand up, he could crawl, maybe even reach the door if I wanted to. It was a shock. I don't know how else to describe it. Who was that person? I had never seen him before in my life. When that guy saw that it wasn't the one he was expecting to bring him the food, his expression changed instantly. He became desperate. He began to beg me to release him. He screamed loudly in a broken voice. Torn, he threw himself at me as best he could, dragging his remaining leg, causing the chain to clatter against the cement floor. I let go of the tray and the container fell to the floor, smearing the food everywhere. I backed away, ran down the stairs as best I could, closed the door and went out into the yard, trembling. I didn't look back, I ran home. I was on the verge of a heart attack. My dad saw my face and was scared. He asked me what had happened, if I had gotten into a fight, if I was okay. The only lie I could think of telling him was that a dog had chased me in the street and that I had fallen because I thought I was going to fall. Bite. He believed me, he didn't ask any more questions. That night I couldn't sleep. The image wouldn't let go. It was so impactful that even if I closed my eyes, the scene was still there. That person begging, crawling with the chain taut. First of all, I couldn't understand why my uncle was holding a prisoner. There was no logic, no justification, nothing made sense. And secondly, I felt bad for throwing away the food. Right now, in the dark, that person would have to be picking up dinner off the floor with just one hand. My uncle asked me to do it a second time, and then a third. The second time I was better prepared. I went in with my headphones on, the music turned up loud. I didn't want to hear him, I didn't want to know if he was screaming, crying, begging. I just had to do the job, heat up the food, bring it up, put it down, and leave. That was it. But even with the music playing, I couldn't help but turn to look at him. He was very thin, he was missing fingers on one hand, and both ears, not cut off precisely, were not surgically. It looked like they had been torn out. He covered the side of his face with his palm as if he could hide a hole. He looked at me, didn't shout, didn't ask for anything, just looked at me as if he already knew I wasn't going to do anything for him. I put the food on the floor without a word, closed the door, and went back into the house with a lump in my throat that lasted all day. The third time I didn't even turn on the light. I went upstairs with the tray shaking in my hands. I put the bowl down as soon as one got there, groping blindly with my feet, and went right back downstairs. After I fed him, I came to think that I didn't want to know, that if my uncle ever tried to tell me the truth about this person, I would stop him, I would tell him not to tell me anything, that I would rather live without knowing, that I was okay with never seeing him again. Who does that to another person and why? My uncle came back, didn't give many details. He said he had been in an accident, but he never went into detail about it, or how, nor where, nor with whom. It was just that he hadn't been able to return earlier. He thanked me in a very strange way. I remember it well because he was carrying a Nintendo Switch under his arm. The console had just come out on the market. Very few people had it yet. I had been longing for it for weeks. Let me tell you, I didn't even feel like taking the device out of the box. I stared at it for a long time as if it were something dirty. With that device, he was trying to buy my silence. I wondered if something like that could calm my mind. Could turn off the images that came to me at bedtime without invitation. Come at night so I can tell you, my uncle told me on the phone. He said it as if he owed me a story, as if he really wanted to tell it. I didn't go at the agreed time, he called me, he insisted. In the end he convinced me, but I set a condition. Not in his house, in any closed place, nothing with a door that could be closed behind me. We met in the park behind Walmart, the same one where he had hidden the key as if everything was connected to that point. He sat on the metal bench as if it were any other night. He looked me in the eye. The man in chains was the one who scammed me. He tried to explain to me everything he did to get to him. What I remember was that he said he had the phone numbers of the people who had scammed him, that for weeks he had tried to reach them by those numbers, but they had blocked him. Obviously, he bought a new phone chip and called again. Not only did they not answer, the numbers had been cancelled. All of that, he told me, was obvious, logical. He had no way of reaching them, but he remembered the name of one of the people, just one of them. He looked her up on the internet, patiently tracking her down. When he found her, the former secretary of one of the partners, he offered her 50,000 pesos for the fur coat so she could put the guy on, tell him the time and place where he could find him, that he just wanted to talk to him. That's what he told her. How did he get to the attic? How did he catch him? He never told me. I don't know if it was because he didn't want to or because he thought it was better that way. What he did tell me was something I'll never forget in my life. He told me with a dry coldness, almost as if he were remembering part of his routine. What he was feeding her, what was in the toppers, was none other than his own flesh. Quote, "Do you remember how he was missing a leg?" he said without blinking. I left the park staggering. I had barely crossed the street when I hugged a tree because I felt like I was going to faint. Then my head started spinning. My chest was pounding like it was going to burst, and then I felt it rising up in my throat. I threw up right there, in the shade, full of rage, fear, something I didn't know how to name. The day I heated up the food in the microwave, just to see what it was, I tried it. There are many things about this story that I don't know, that we'll probably never know, and that are just as intriguing as everything I've already told you. One day, I don't know who, although I could guess, perhaps those people who gave him the first blow and who later received one in return decided to fight back. An armed group shot up his house. It was at dawn. My uncle died on the way to the hospital. I'm sorry, I really am. I know how much he suffered. Although knowing him, I'm sure that his life really ended the day he lost all his money. It pains me to say it, but it embarrasses me that his entire personality vanished along with his material possessions, as if there were no other reason to continue living. As if he didn't know who he was without all that. But what began to torment me the most was the sudden idea that that person, the one I saw chained up in the attic, was probably still alive there, locked up, without food. I was the only one who knew, the only one. I thought many times about going to the police, about saying that there was someone trapped in the house, but I was paralyzed by a single question. And how do you know that? With all the grief, one day I plucked up the courage. I approached one of the police officers guarding the house. I told him that my uncle had someone locked up. He listened to me with a face that didn't quite understand. He spoke to someone else on the radio. He told me that they were going to check and left. I never knew if they did anything. Most likely they ignored me. Maybe they thought I was making it up. Maybe they thought I was just another crazy person. But it made me anxious. Because I was convinced that even though that person had robbed my uncle, he had already paid and paid dearly. I looked for the key in the park, but it was gone. I dug around like an idiot among the swings, nothing. I went to the house, tried to get in, couldn't, everything was locked. The house is empty to this day. I don't dare tell you where it is. It's a house that my uncles have tried to sell several times without success. People around say it's because it's too expensive, that the market is slow, that no one wants to invest in that area. But I know that's not why. I know it's because it's stained. The neighbors also say that at night they hear moans and chains, that there's something locked up there. They think it's haunted like the houses in old movies with ghosts dragging chains through the hallways. No one asked me to tell this, no one forced me. But I want you to know something, that thing about keeping secrets costs you your soul. It's real. I carry it with me every day, and although sometimes I try to forget it as if it were a story that someone else told me, there's always something that brings it back to me. Like when you leave home and since you're far away, you remember that you didn't stop feeding the dog.